destroy them, A, because they were leaders, right, and so on and so forth. They were designated. Hold on a second. Who picked them? Was it just the leaders? Or was there a specific command from them? I think it's the leaders, right?
They were the leaders, yeah.
Just the leaders. In other words, God did not specify who was the leader.
And then Rashi says they'll share him.
Yeah, you have to think that, because right, why would Moshe Rabbeinu send Rishayim on a mission? It doesn't make sense.
But even if these 10 people did something terrible, so the response of Kol Yisrael seems to be like not in line with what you'd expect. Like, I try to imagine myself like in their position, and they had Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they had Kriyas Yom Tov, and they had Har Sinai, and they had the the Unneged Kavod and the pillar of fire at night. Right? And I think I would understand if, like, after the Raglan came back, if they would have gone to Moshe and said, well, it looks very dangerous. Is God going to protect us? Mm-hmm. But instead what they did was, they said, we're going to die. We're going to die. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're like, incredibly fatalistic. I mean, what about everything that happened? It seems like, the strange thing is that it seems like after everything that happened, they really didn't progress like one bit. No, it didn't affect them. Like, how could a person see those things and have it not affect them?
Now, just look, you were doing fine. Now you don't know too quickly. You have to bear in mind, you got too quickly on the phone. I can't find
it. Okay. And what it seems like is that they saw all of these miracles and everything that happened on Har Sinai, and it just didn't affect them one bit.
Very powerful question. That's a good question. And it's like a general question, too. But people are concerned in general, like even before this point, that it seems that the Jews are always testing. They're always testing God. Well, that's what's announced. I said in 2 cents a month. I mean, that's basically.
That's why
this is so severe. God condemns them, and God wants to destroy them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that this faith, which is so serious, seems to be on the same level as the Eta Ego. I raised that question this week, that Eta Ego, we can understand why the decision was to destroy them, absent the intervention of Moshe. But the Moshe intervened and prayed for them, saved them. But the decision was, well?
Yes.
Okay. The decision was to destroy them. All right, but there's the faith of Odegora. But this, I mean, it's a serious avera and all of that, but what was there about this rebellion that warranted their being destroyed?
But what are you doing bothering me about this question, though?
You see, but the question doesn't indicate that. But Yomer, I just want to point out, I understand what you're saying. It's not as if this is foreign to the party. This is included because in Yudal Yidala, Payom Hashem Amosha, Ad Ona Yenatini, Amazer, the Ad Ona Lo Yaminu Bin. That's just the indictment. The Ad Ona Lo Yaminu Bin. Before her Osos, I said, she's the giver. That's exactly what you're saying. There's two indictments. One is Yenatini. Okay? To anger me. And I don't know what you mean with it. It's the concern of Muna, Bechor Ota. It is, in spite of all the God does mention, Bechor Ota. Because God is not demanding a baseless Muna. This is time to have Muna. But Bechor Ota. It's still Kohanis and Shishiro. How you let Muhammad tell you how to do the Kayin of the Kohanis. And then Rashi, Yosef, Rashi is saying the exact thing that you're saying.
But what I don't understand is that, I understand, maybe you could even argue that philosophically somehow.
One second. Did you grasp that what I just said, that Rashi said the same thing that you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you can argue that philosophically somehow they managed, they didn't really progress at all. But each time they would go against God, like a few thousand or tens of thousands of them would get killed.
Right.
Right? Like with drinking the water from Degel Zahav or Tavera, right?
Yeah.
At the least, I think that they'd be afraid that if they went against God, he was going to kill them. You know? And I mean,
I think the question is like this. In other words, that's just, on the one hand, that's exactly the case. What you're describing is the case. And in fact, in this prophet that we just mentioned, I mean, with Rashi's interpretation, Rashi's saying the exact thing that you're saying. I think your question is, though, that it's difficult. Yeah, true, that's the case, but it's difficult to understand how they could submit such a case if you put yourself mm-hmm. into their context.
Well, for two reasons.
You're asking psychologically. I mean, in other words, you're saying, well, what kind of people are we talking about? Let's go further. What kind of people are we talking about? Are these people intelligent people? Are they rational people? And do they function normally? You're saying anybody in that situation would function normally. It's like people have fears. People have fears of flying. People have fears of driving, of swimming, whatever the case may be. But you try and talk a person out of the fears, and you assure them you'll help them. And then you know, the person gets on an airplane, and then he flies, and then he flies over water. I mean, all these different things. And so eventually he learns to trust, or whatever example you want to set up. That is to say that people adapt to the reality. Or in terms of being, let's say you have a dangerous job at sea, and you have to depend upon the rescue from the Coast Guard, sometimes from helicopters, and so on and so forth, so you're terribly afraid, and you don't trust. But then after occasion, you've been lost this way, and they came to rescue you, then another way, and they came to rescue you. And after all of that, you build up a record. You build up a record of trust, and after 10 years of being involved in that kind of situation, you have the Army, the Air Force, etc. So it would be crazy if a person were to refuse to go on a mission because he's afraid he might get separated, get lost, and then he'll be stranded. And everybody would say, what are you talking about? You've been in the business for 10 years. You've seen every... That's your question, I believe.
Well, but even if they didn't have a mission, even if they philosophically they're able to ignore everything that happened, I'm saying, what about the fact that every time they would go against God, like a few thousand?
Well, let's forget it. You're piling on. You got to slow down and calm down a little bit, will you? Calm down. I heard the question. Fundamental. Forget about the fact that they saw that those who rebelled against God got killed. Obviously, that didn't affect them. But the more fundamental question is not that. That's not the reason. Even the God does not indict them for that. And say, well, how could you rebel against me? You saw that the last man that rebelled against you got killed. You saw what happened to the Mitzvah. I think that's a separate type of an issue. Isn't it more fundamental to understand? You see, that angle is looking at it from the angle of fear. Why didn't they have fear? Not because they should have believed in me. See, that's not the point. The point is not that would not be a big milo. That a person went along with it just because he was so terrified that he might be killed. But really, you feel like in a state of contradiction. On the one hand, he's terrified to go into the land because he doesn't have faith in God. On the other hand, he's terrified to rebel against God because he's afraid that maybe that would be someone who's totally torn and confused. That would be a state of a person completely confused, what you're presenting now. But what you're really saying is that how come they didn't go ahead only because they saw that other guys that didn't go along with it got killed. That's not a people don't function that way. Unless the guy is completely as I said, totally in a state of absolute paralysis, doesn't know what to do. He's afraid to follow God, he's afraid to rebel against God. Now, that would be some kind of paralysis. And most people don't, remain in that condition of paralysis. They didn't remain in that condition. So the real question, however, the first question we asked is, why didn't they have the faith that would enable them to go into the country and trust God? That's not the same thing as today, but why did they also, why did they go? Because they realized they didn't go, they'd be killed. That's a completely different issue. Okay?
I understand.
So why are you piling on? It doesn't make any sense.
It's
two separate questions. Excuse me. Yes?
Yeah.
So calm down and just like deal with one thing at a time.
Right.
Organize the material.
No, I'm just pointing out that according to their psychology, it seems like a really bizarre
psychology. No, but actually, I understand. Everything seems strange, and I agree with you. But if you want to proceed, you got to proceed methodically. The main question of this parsha is not the other, the second thing. The main question is, what happened over here? What happened, and how could this happen after everything that's taken place? After everything they've seen, what happened over here? Why didn't they have the emunah? Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay. All right, any suggestions? It's a tough question, of course, it's a tough question. Because, it's not so simple. I mean, you're going to try and put yourself into other people's minds, into the psychology. I mean, and also it's not recorded. You know, we don't have any explanation from the participants as to what they went through psychologically. But we can try and get maybe a general idea. So it's not just a gaping question.
I would be incredibly curious to read an account.
The thing is, like this, in these types of questions, you can't look for a knockout punch. You just have to be content with a little opening, a little this, a little that, and over the years, you get a more mature sense of what's going on. Obviously, look, what the start is, obviously, let me just say something I think which is very, very important to start with. When you read these accounts, especially when you read it in a childish kind of a fashion. I mean, I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, we learn these stories as children. And see, a child is like everything is an absolute. You know, they saw the mighty hand of God and this and that, and they believed in God. So the sense it conveys, you know, like a child, like you're out there standing, and this hero comes along, Superman comes along and saves you, so of course you believe in Superman. Alright? You have to assume, however, that God does not relate to them in such a manner. It's very important to realize that. But I said God does not relate to them in a manner which would exclude the possibility for them to have free will. That's what you have to say. You know, in all of these cases. And God does not relate to people in that way. I mean, it's just part of God's hanhaga. If God were to relate to us in such a way that every time a person would commit an avera, they'd be punished immediately, and so on. I mean, if God could run the world that way, and nobody would ever sin, and every time a person did a good deed, he'd be rewarded for it immediately and visibly and clearly in a manner which leaves no room for any kind of doubt. So then the person really wouldn't have free will. Now, I don't think, again, you have to realize, you have to put it in some kind of a context, that even when these things occurred to the Jews in the wilderness, it did not remove the elements of free will. It didn't remove the elements of free will. That is to say that they start to use their intelligence. And it wasn't, for example, they were never in a state. We assume that they had this state of mind you look at it in retrospect, what you see is 40 years later when they entered the land. So everything, the rules of the reason from coming down, this and that. So you figure, like, what is the big deal? I mean, well, what do you need courage for? You don't need any courage. You're looking at it after the fact. That is, it seems like a joke. Well, how do these people have any doubts? Like, you're walking on some magical carpet over here. Like, everything's going to just fall down in front of you. Like, why do you even need courage to enter the land? Now, that you have to revise. You have to look at it in a more realistic. That's why it's difficult. I mean, what the challenge that Yosef is posing over here is for us to really try and get a clearer understanding of how these people function in a more realistic way, given that they were in the presence of all these miracles, and still it wasn't enough. You're not dealing with crazy people. That's the point. Are we dealing with, as I started to say that before, what kind of people are we dealing with? Are we dealing with crazy people, irrational people? Then nothing makes sense. Obviously, these were rational people, intelligent people, and these were leaders. And they had witnessed everything. And yet, they fell apart. So, that's what we're going to try and understand. All right? Now, it seems to me that there are two phases over here. If you want to understand the downfall, it's really two phases. The first one is the story of the downfall of the Maraja. That's a whole question. There's a lot of angles over here. I mean, why did they send the Maraja in the first place? Was this a Tzivui Hashem? Or was this something that they themselves did on their own initiative? There's a lot of aspects to the story of the Maraja. You see the Rashi at the beginning? I'll tell you what we'll try and do. You know, I don't know if I can go directly to answer the question. Yosef. We'll get started. Maybe it'll require another session. I think we should. You can't just give an answer over here. But you have to, like, as I said, the first thing is the story of the Maraja. What happened to the Maraja? The Maraja, you see, because that goes a long way. But then there's the fate of the Maraglim, then there's the fate of the Am. That the Am were Makabel, the Maraglim. The report of the Maraglim. They all Makabel. So that's part two. That's a little bit easier to understand. Because people obviously are going to be affected by the leaders. By the report of the leaders. It's just the way the leaders felt about it. So then that attitude infected the entire people. And that was a real thing. In other words, the cause, the catalyst, was the Maraja. Was the fate of the Maraja. But if it was just the Maraja themselves, of the Maraja?
Yeah.
What was the fate? What was their fate?
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to that in a second.
It's more
than that. Oh, yeah, the Ramban has that question. All right. We'll just get started. We'll attack it from different angles. So to speak. Point there, you know. Maybe next session we'll put all the pieces together, or maybe during the course of the week we have time. Yeah, that's a good one. I guess a good question, and who said yes, a good question, is that there's a great authority who raised that question. Who raised that question before Morty came along?
Ramban.
Yeah. So you got the question from Ramban?
No, I didn't
hear it. Who told you?
Yeah.
I said, did you Ramban? I said, a great authority.
Oh,
okay. Just really know what I say. Okay. Let's start with the Ramban, all right? I mean, then you have Rashi, there's different. No, let's get started today. Let's start with the Ramban. You guys have Rambans there?
Mm-hmm.
All right, get the Ramban. But by the way, you know, if you're going out to the battle, you got to bring your weapons with you. By this time, as you I don't think there's too much chance that each person could have a...
While they're getting the rub bomb, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, I'm just saying that in general, these guys, in general, each guy should have a chumash. A chumash here, and it should be a chumash you can make the gross to go with. But of course, yeah, guys, what's going on?
There's Rashi that says basically, I don't know if it was Kohen went to go see the Ovos.
Yeah.
And basically, Rashi says he prostrated himself there.
Yeah. Yeah,
so how do we understand that he bowed down? Obviously, he's not, you know, praying to, you know...
Right, I have a whole shiur on that. Very, very interesting shiur on that. I don't know how to... I'm telling you, but please. As I said, this week we'll try, you know... We'll have time to do extra stuff. We'll have time to do extra stuff with
this.
Sorry?
I'll put it on the to-do list.
Yeah, please. Keep them in for all these questions. The questions show interest. That's entirely no. I'm serious.
Everybody?
Here it is. Here's Ramban. Ramban. Very important Ramban.
What's the time?
Yes, the Ramban is on day. Don't put that. I think it's the first Ramban. He starts off by responding to Rashi. Take a look at Rashi first. Lach Lach. So Rashi says, I ain't sure for now. The Dachra. Lach Lach Lach. Dachra means that God is not commanding you. The implication of what God for me is up to you. He's giving him permission. I'm starting with Rashi. Rakhbaba was asked. It means to say God put it in his hand. It's his decision to make. Of course, that's very unusual because that would presuppose that God has been consulted on that. God doesn't, you don't initiate an instruction with the word for God. You know, that usually the way you would do it, you know, literally would be the God commanded him. But Rashi is saying, no, the God said, Ani eino, eini mitzavala, I'm not commanding you to do this. But Rashi immediately says that this does not originate as a command from God, sent by. But here says Shlach, if you want to, you can send. So that, of course, raises kinds of questions. What kind of sin? Where do you find this? What do you mean, want to sin? Well, why would he want to? It's different than any other instruction, any command God gives. Do this, go to this time, whatever, you know. It's not voluntary. But here, Rashi says, all God is saying is that if you want to send Christ, then so. I'm not commanding you to send Christ. So watch before Rashi continues. Because you have to, this, to get an understanding, you have to compare the account in Bat Mitzvah to the account in the Torah. But these are Bar Yisrael, because the Jews had come, the Amru, when they said, Nishmacha Anashim Lefaneinu, let us send a man in front of us. Briefly, quickly, take a look at the Torah. You gotta be, there's a lot of stories where you have the account in the Devarim, and to get a complete picture, because the Devarim will provide more detail. Because in the Devarim, Moshe is recounting it from the standpoint of his mussar that he's giving to them. It's so kacha and so forth. So we'll always add, you know, the details that are significant, which are not included in the first account. We're just giving you the basic story. So what did the Devarim, Devarim Aleph of Day, Thank you. So here it says that never well acted before that person. It says that the Vanita Mechore, he traveled from Kore, Vanilla, it's called Mitra Kodu Vanara Ru, I said, Yisam Derek Ha Ramori, I said, Tiva Roshan Rokeno Osanu, Vanava at Kodesh Panea. Okay? So they were in Kodesh Panea. This was the jump off point in which they were to enter into the land. So Omar Alekhan, and I said to you, Bosom at Ha Ramori, I said, Roshan Rokeno, no same one. You come to the Ha'arah Mori that God is given to you. They know some of Hashem Rochechel of Menachas Oret. See that God has placed before you the land. Alei Rei. Go up and inherit it. That's a Jibar Hashem Rochechel of Menachas. As God has spoken to you. I'll be of you, I'll take you. Do not be afraid, and do not be, fearful, right, whatever. But this is what happened. But you said, you see, this is not recounted in the Alphonse, the Rock. Rock doesn't give you the details of the background. It's simply out of nowhere, that's it. But over here, we're being told that that Moshe, when they reached Kodesh Panea, Moshe told them, okay, he charges them, so to speak. Get ready, this is the next step. You have to go up and conquer the land. So what happened next is like, Sikuhun Eli Kulchan. You all, Kulchan, all of you, approached me. Atamru, and you said, Mishpachah Nashim Lefaneinu. Let us send men before us. Yachtu Vadu Asara. And let them dig out, so to speak. Digging out means that they're like spying, but they're, you know, different expressions. Essentially, it means to get information. The Yeshiva also is double. In order to bring back information, as a Derek Hashem Na'alepa, the road that we should travel on, the Eta Orem Hashemava Alayim, and the cities that we should come to. Well, this seems to be a request. It's a legitimate request, but whether it's legitimate or not, there remains to be seen. But in an ordinary, it's just the case that the Jews are being commanded to engage in conflict, and the responsibility is upon them. And they have to go and invade the land. It doesn't make sense. It seems to make sense that you don't just go, you don't just jump in without any preparation.
You see that it was legitimate because
later on with
Moshe says it was a good idea.
Now we also see now the riot, the biggest riot, and 40 years later when they went to the land, they sent them the two spies, you know,
yeah.
Russell.
Yeah.
Right.
But in that case, you only needed two spies.
Okay, fine. We'll get there. Good point. All your points are good, if you are. But the subplot sounds all right, because to the contrary, to even if you're confident that God is on your side, if you believe that you have to operate in accordance with the reality, you can't just go into battle with some type of a crazy faith that God is going to save you. You don't have to do mishdagla, so to speak. Vayita v'enei adama. Oh, the Moshe likes it. Moshe liked it. Why do you like the idea? It seems to me because it showed that the Jews were prepared, that there was no resistance. Was this resistance a delay, or was this not? To the contrary, that there was going to send in people to get information. That's correct. God doesn't want you to operate blindly. That doesn't make any sense. You have to be faithful. So it says, I eat the Eile Adam. The Ekach is 10 same as I not him. It says, I'm a Shabbat. And I picked out 12 men, each man representing a Shabbat. Here, no rest is made of God. Yes, and this is alone, if you read the two accounts, you have to be aware of these things. I mean, our Bible says, come along and say, there's two different authors. Because in Torah, it has nothing, you don't see anything of this. It all comes from God. Not from us. God's command. In Devarim, no mention of God. It's Moshe's idea. So then it becomes a real question, how do you reconcile these two accounts? Okay? Now, so Rashi over here in the Devarim, Aitas Einai, the Einai Adam, and the matter was good in my eyes. The Einai below the Einai Hamata. The Rashi says, yeah, it was good in my eyes, but not in the eyes of God. Begin the Einai Moshe Hayatov, and if Moshe was a good idea, well, Muhammad was a good Chachos. So why did Moshe mention this in the Chachos? Because in Devarim, essentially, he's going to rebuke. He's going to rebuke them for the faith. So what was good about this? Alright, let's, whatever. I'm going to skip the next part. Okay. Alright, so you're right. Rashi gives an analogy. Rashi gives an analogy about somebody who's buying an object and the example of a Hamara, which is a car. He could use it as an example of a car. And the person who buys it is I want to test it out on the highway. I want to test it out in the in the dirt road. Etc, etc, etc. So if the guy will refuse, so he's not going to want to buy the car. The guy answers, yeah, fine, say, you want to take it on the highway, take it out. You want to take it to the dirt, take it on the dirt. Ah, and the guy says, okay, I'll buy it. I don't have to take it anywhere. Because he sees from the attitude of the person that he has nothing to hide. So it's the Rashi explaining, so Moshe Rabbeinu had no choice, so to speak, but to go along with it. Because had he prevented them, then they would have used that as a pretext. Moshe doesn't want to sleep on it. That's the rest.
I mean, that seems to reconcile the difference in the accounts.
One second. After he concludes that, after I knew how deep he would liberate him, I also, if you're right, he's saying over here that I agree with your request, then, Pachiru Bachan. I only think so because I was concerned that you changed your mind because it's serious to any defending my heart. I mean, to any marker. So I can look at that. Yeah. In other words, Rashi is saying that Moshe sensed that there was resistance over there and that they were testing him to see whether he would agree. So his purpose. His purpose was that, what he said, what Rashi's idea is that Moshe really didn't want them to go. But, he didn't stand in their way, because he was hoping that by agreeing to the request, they would drop the whole thing. But the person that starts requesting, well, I want to drive the car here, I want to send it out here, etc., etc., and if the person starts to put obstacles, then he won't buy the car. But on the other hand, if he agrees to all the conditions, then the other person will say, fine, I'll take the car, I don't have any need to test it, because I can see from your attitude that you have nothing to hide. That's the rest of the problem. What, Jose?
It seems like, at least,
if
you didn't look at
the
motive, but you just looked at what the material of the request was, so like tomorrow at 20 a.m, like you pointed out, from Kalev and Pinchas going in with, when you were sent them, that there were legitimate reasons for sending them to Moshe.
Yes.
So it seems like that could reconcile a difference between, the enthusiasm for sending them that's mentioned in Devarim and the fact that, that Moshe is saying that it's a bad idea, according to what's spoken in Bamidbar, right? Because when they first came to him, it seemed like a legitimate request.
Okay.
So of course he would be, happy to send them to Moshe because they're just carrying up the car with him.
Right.
But then we saw, the Luma Christina, right?
He saw the true
motivations that they had, and that's when he didn't want to send them, and I shouldn't have told him to send them.
But So where do you see that? Where do you see the true motivation?
Because that seems to be what it's saying in Bamidbar. Because in that Rashi, where he says that, you know, I told you that the land was good.
But we didn't do that yet.
What?
We did not do that last year.
Okay.
Let's do it first, and we'll see. Let's go back to Rashi now and Shlach Lecha. What we have to do is reconcile to where the Shlach Lecha fit in. Because in Devarim, there's no Shlach Lecha. The people come to Moshe, and Moshe says, fine. Moshe is not Moshe agrees. So now we're now getting back to Rashi, Shlach Lecha, the Da'atma. It's up to you. I mean, Amy Mitzavala. I'm not commanding you. In Pirta Shlach, if you want to, then. The Pisha Bar Yisrael, the Amro, because the Jews have come and said, Mishpacha Anashim Lefaneinu. Let us send out men in Sephora. To Masha Nevar, it says in Devar HaMashit, to run out like both. Then it says, Moshe didn't love the truth. Moshe, the council was done. He didn't know what to do. According to this, Moshe really did not know what to do. Whether, which is interesting, what's the suffix over here? What is the suffix? But, Rashi says, and Rashi is reconciling this account, Moshe conferred with God. And God said, Amar, he said, Ani Amashulam, he told him. I told him it was a good land. So Nemar, I quote the public, Allah Ephraim, and Ani Mitzrayim, when in close Gimel Yisrael, already, Moshe had communicated the message of God that I'm going to take them from the land of Eretz Yisrael to a land which is the Zavos Kol Vavos. So the idea that the land that they were going to be going to was a good new land. That's something which they already knew. They had it on command from God. Okay? Rashi just quotes the beginning of that passage, but that's how it ends. So, Chayehem, Shani Nosum, and Makam Lippa. By their lives, I am going to give them an opportunity to err, to dip in Meragla, in the matter of the Meragla. Raman, Lo Yerushua, so that they wouldn't inherit it. Same kind of a rush. You put it all together then, you put it all together, What Rashi is saying, it's a very, very strange phenomenon, is that this is something which did not originate in the Torah. There was no command of God. They should have Moragra. But that was something which the Jews requested. The Jews requested it, and Moshe really didn't know what to do. He didn't know if it was a good idea or not a good idea. Okay, so we resume our Fakina. Now, the response that Rashi quotes is also a little bit difficult because according to the Tanfuma that Rashi is quoting, it would seem that God really, so to speak, of course, when we speak about God, wasn't happy with it. God didn't embrace it, so to speak. Because it seems that God is criticizing it. I told them it's a good land. What's the problem? So it seemed that God was opposed to it. Yet, even though that was the case, God didn't forbid it. And God said, I'm going to give them a makom lita. I'm going to give them the opportunity to err, which means I'm going to give them they can have the miracle. That will be an opportunity to err, and in order that they don't inherit it. Which I guess means if they're not worthy, they won't inherit it. But I'm not going to protect them either. In other words, it seems that the whole downfall, really, the entire downfall of the Jewish people, the setback of 40 years in the wilderness, was a result of this mission. So this becomes a very important question as to why this mission was allowed to proceed. Now, according to Rashi, this is Rashi's account. Rashi's understanding is that it originated with the people. As far as Moshe was concerned, it says that it was good in his eyes. He wasn't opposed, but, I mean, neither was he prepared. He was not prepared to give the go-ahead on his own. He didn't think that this was a decision that he should make, but the point of fact, Rashi just threw it back to Moshe. Rashi threw it back to Moshe. Rashi said, well, that's what's up to you. And that is to say, if I recall, years ago, I did expounding on this, like, Ladatka, meaning like, I think he used this expression, like, I can't help you on this one, so to speak. Not that I can't. In other words, it is spoken in the language of Bnei Adam. That, it's just an interesting idea, just upon this, because generally, everything you find in the Torah is either something which is initiated by people, like, or most of the decisions. Or most of the time it's acting on God's order, instructions from God. And here Moshe is nimble. So Moshe is taking counsel with God, and God is sort of saying, you're on your own here. It's an interesting idea. Because that's another reality, you know, like it's hard for us to guess that, because we have this sense that everything is being determined, you know, like God has a plan, we have to do this, and that. Sometimes you're on your own. I'm not going to tell you what to do. It's an amazing idea, like, you have to use your own judgment here. Even though I could tell you what to do, but that's what it seems to be. And Moshe found me decided to go ahead with it. Well, I mean, that seems to be the, but he said that to be a Moshe, no, that as far as Moshe could see, it was basically a good idea, because what the people wanted to send out spies. God didn't tell him no. God did not tell him no. But it's very strange. You know what's strange in this Hantuma is that it doesn't this bother you? Because God sort of criticizes them. Seems like there's a critique. And that is that I told them that it's good. Now where does that fit into the picture? What does that have to do with it? That is to say that from that perspective, there was a certain element of denial that the land was really good. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, the request, at least on the surface, the request for spies on a logical level makes sense. So yeah, you need spies to, you don't just go into the land blind. So whatever the criticism, what does that do with the fact that I told them that the land is good, they need to see for themselves? What do you see from that? Fellas? What? But that's, where do you see that in their statement? Where do you see that in their behavior?
You
don't. So what do you have to say? I think I said this years ago. I guess I said this years ago. But, you know, forget about that. Let's look at it from a fresh perspective. That, it does seem to me that this is, that there was a different level over here. There was a deeper level. That it was not just a matter, this is what they said, that they couched, they framed it, their needs. They had a certain need that was true. They weren't ready to just go off and inherit the land, but they framed their request in terms of the military, that we can't just enter the land without spying it out. But the real objective was to see whether it was a good land. And that seems to be from the criticism, that that's the criticism, that the God is saying that really there's another element over here. It's not so precious. And that is that before they mobilize to go into the land, they want to see for themselves what kind of land it is, specifically, and that's where the criticism is. Because I told them it's a good land. That should be sufficient. What do you have to see for yourself? See, there is a makom litov. There, if that's the day, fine. They would have been better off to just rely on what I said. You see, but that's something we can identify with. That there's a very powerful emotion in people, that people are not content with an abstract concept of the good. But the way they relate to the good, it has to make an impact upon their particular, they have to see themselves. You see that, you find that in many cases, like somebody describes a situation that you've never been to. Right? You can go down to the show, to town, whatever, it's really good. Everything, but, no, they need, everybody feels his own emotions as to satisfy. That's what he regards as a good. So God told him that it's a goodly land. The goodly land, and so on and so forth. So that's it. I mean, what do you have to teach yourself? But that apparently, you see over there already, it's kind of a breakdown. There's a breakdown in terms of their level. They should have been on the level where they were completely happy and attached emotionally to the land, to the desire for the land, because this is the land of God, that God designated, and God designated as the good. So that's the good. The good is what God designated as the good. Not your own emotional idea of the good, which is based upon the senses, the sensory phenomena. Now, the fact of the matter is that this would go a long way, and there's many, many questions you can ask about the whole story. That is, if you compare the two spies to the Pinchas and Peleg that went out to the Yericho? Huh?
Yeah.
But that mission is completely different than this mission. Because in a true spying mission, which is basically just the military information, why do you need 12? Well, where do you arrive at the number 12?
Well, it's worse than that more.
I'm sorry?
In a spying mission, it's worse than that more.
Think you have more?
Yes, it's better to have less people.
It's better to have less. And you see...
Why do you
have
to have one from each
shaver and the head of the shaver? Exactly. Why do you have to have one from each shaver? Why must you be the head of the shaver? You go for the best spine. But more than that, you see in the instructions that Moshe gave them that contain two different objectives. One seems to be the military, but the other one has to do with non-military things. The agriculture, and bring back, well, that's why, what is the point of bringing back the fruits of the land? This comes on to military. Take a look at the requirements over here. He goes through it, after Moshe picked out the men. And you giants. And you saw those of Moshe Lusser's Arsenal. Ayom Alayam Aliza Banega, Malisa Mesahar. Uriza Mesahar's Mayhi, Yasam Ayoshi Valef, Echazaku Arafa. Okay, that's military. Are they strong or weak? I'm a Hachu and Rav. You are many. Who Moharat Ashahu Yoshi for Hachu Behi and Rav? What does that have to do with anything? If it's good or bad. Umaha Arab, I said yesterday, and I have a Bachman who's listening. I think that's fine. That's whether it's walled cities or whether they're open cities. Umaha Arab, Ashnega, he and Raza. Is the land rich or smart? That seems to be an agricultural phenomenon. AHBH, trees. The Kazakhstan will attack to the pre-Arab. And strengthen yourself and take from the fruits of the land. By Yavim, you may be too rare enough. And in fact, they did bring back these clusters of grapes. Now, what does the bringing back of a cluster of grapes have to do with anything?
It's gaseous.
What happened? Why is that any kind of a necessity in terms of an invasion?
Is it a cover up?
What are you cover up?
The real intent is not to go out and abandon the land?
You need to cover up the fact that it was fine?
No, they came back and told them they didn't know how bad it was, right?
No, but I'm saying, but why did Moshe originally instruct them in matters that were agricultural, and what was the necessity of knowing these things? Was there any real necessity to
it? It seems like maybe that's what they needed.
That's what they needed.
That's what they wanted.
You know, we're tying with the Tanchuma, but I told them it's good. Yeah, what were you saying? Who else is saying that?
Yosef's
good.
No? No, I hear Howie. He was hoping that the very problem that was causing them to send them wrongly in the first place would be solved, you know, their lack of faith in God would be solved when they saw that he was right, that the land really was that good.
Right. Right.
In the back part.
Yeah, because it wasn't good enough when he said that God gave the land. You know, the land is good. God let's call it with us. So.
Right. Yeah, I think I wanted to say, just roughly remember that, along these lines, that that there was a the request for spies, in requesting the spies, because Moshe wasn't sure. And Moshe asked, was Nimrod the king? And the answer was that it's up to you, but I told them it's a good land, which would indicate that, see, I wanted to make a connection that a person, really, the Jews should have had courage. The Jews should have had courage and be willing to follow, you know, God and to go up into the land and to rely on the Avtacha that God will be with them and that they'll be victorious if they do what they have to do. But it would seem that they weren't at that level. Because you said, I'll lay rake. That's it. From the objective standpoint, you people should be prepared for the next day. You were taken out of Egypt, you were given the Torah, God brought you through the Midbar, so on. At this point in time, you're ready for the next day. But apparently, they weren't ready. Now, the level, sometimes a person needs an incentive. See, if a person is willing, you see, when a person has just so much courage. So, however, a person is willing to make a greater effort and to take greater risk. You see, people take more risk in life if it's something to which they're personally attached. A person, you know, just in general, to defend the neighborhood or defend the country, whatever, he may not have enough courage. It may not be enough. But if it's his own house, his own family, if his own treasury is money, I mean, then he'll take risks. He'll act differently. So it seems that in order for them to be on the level where they were prepared to make the move, That was the defect. They needed a incentive. They needed to be reassured of the fact that it was a good land, which was really a chisara event. That was a chisara. Because that element should have been in place. The idea that you're fake, but the idea that this is clearly good, and this is something worth fighting for, and this is something you should be raised in, that should have been established on the basis of God's promise. You don't need anything more than that. There's absolutely no reason to look. There's no need to see anything. But apparently that was part of the problem. That was not enough. They needed to be reassured on a personal level, and perhaps, I mean, that's what he said to me, to bring back a report about all the goodness of the land. And to bring back the fruits of the land. And then when they see that, so that'll create a certain excitement about the land. That's what it seems to me. That there was a need to create a certain excitement about the land. And once they had that excitement about the land, so then, we're going to go after that. Then they begin this. We've got to fight the enemy. Which on the one hand is a facade, and it's not the highest level, but if the idea is that we have to deal with people on the level that they're at, then that was a decision of Moshe. That okay, so that's what you need. You need to see it, so fine. I'm not gonna, it's not an Avera. It's not an Avera. You want to see the land and you want to be reassured. That's not an Avera, but there's tremendous danger there. There's tremendous danger because once you depart from the abstract, from the absolute, and you're dealing with the particulars now, so there's always a danger. That's why this mission was from the outset, was fraught with a certain danger. Because it was rooted in something which was really a departure from the true level. It was rooted, and once it's rooted in that, if you want to open yourself up to that, you can't control the situation. Because now you're saying it's based upon achieving a certain emotion. And that's an empty kind of thing. You know, and that's precisely what happened. There was this downfall. In fact, you see that when the spies came back, it's interesting. You take a look at the report. How they went about. Clearly, the spies had been totally. They had been demoralized, defeated. The spies had what they saw with their eyes. Because now you're basing everything on what you see with your eyes. What the spies saw with their eyes had a tremendous benefit. They were defeated. They were defeated, and their fate really was, okay, they were defeated. Emotionally, they should have just come back to emotion and say that they're defeated. We're out of it. Take us out of it. We can't be of any help here. They should have been removed from the jury, so to speak. Instead of that, they went ahead and acted on the basis of their emotions. Now, if you see the story of when they came back, they showed them the Priyaharas. They started off in a positive way. They start with all the Yamu, Bodu El Aris, and this last tunnel. The Gams have a solid version, the Gapiria. The Gams. See, they didn't go against that. They confirmed what God had said, that the Gamas followed it up. The Gapiria. See, here's where the rebellion starts. Efes, Tiaza, off. Now, according to the Ramban, this is the proof of faith. According to the Ramban, Efes, Tiaza, off. Ayoshe, Bar. So, Efes, the way the Ramban says, Efes means, it's a very powerful word, it's a loaded kind of a term, Efes, it's all for Efes, it's all nothing. Because Azam, the people are mighty, and the cities are tremendously fortified, and Gam Yavid, they are enough. I mean, now you see that piling on, fear after fear, the giants. This is like an impossible situation, you're not dealing with a normal race, this is a race of giants. There's no way that we can overcome them. Then Amalek Yoshev, Achiti. Now they start to wear them down by the installation of fear. Now at that point, take a look at Ramad. Ayaz Kalei Nazar. Now apparently Kalei and Pinchas had no idea that this is what they were going to do. These guys spotted in secrecy. Huh? I'm sorry. Caleb and Yoshua, right. Had no idea. And, Bayas, he senses the situation getting out of control. He tried to silence everybody. And he said, Olo, Nalo, be irrational, so, Yochomusolo. Varnashim, so you had a counterattack from Kalev and Yoshua. And they know that we'll go up and learn the Yochaluchala. They expressed the other viewpoint that we were there, we saw the thing, there's no problem, we'll go up and conquer. Then it says, Varnashim, as your other Amru, Lo Nuchala, Lo Zachar. There's the actual rebellion. Lo Nuchala, Lo Zachar. All right, we can go to the end. And that's not right, rebellion. That we, there's no way that we can win this situation. There's no way that we can do it. Then, one second. So now you have a sort of a standoff. You have a machlokus between Kalev, doesn't mention Yoshua, but obviously Yoshua is on his side, and the other spies who are saying one side is saying we can go up, we can conquer it, the other side is saying we can't. What happens next? This is the real faith. The real faith, by his rashi, starts off by saying, was once and hour against the land. Now they brought out the Diva. Here's where they debunk the land. And Hokela says there, for Kol Makom, polygamy is the land which consumes its inhabitants. You see, it's also, if you analyze these systems, it seems to be contradictory. Because on the one hand, it says it's the land which consumes its inhabitants. On the other hand, they're saying that all the people we saw are tremendously powerful, which is, you know, one or the other. Two extremes. The Rashi says, for Kol Makom, Shavanu, my son is a great nation. Wherever we went, we saw them burying people. The Kodesh Baruch Hu also retarded. The Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't say that he's tough. He didn't retire them. The Evlon. The Lord Yitzhu Lay is for Avis. Men of great size, I mentioned. And a feeling. And we were forgotten. But you see, it was the... They debunked the land, though. They said there's something... But you see, this idea that... Yeah, you have to kind of take the statement. That they said that... wherever we went, there were funerals. You know, it's kind of the same. Well, what does that mean? Is anybody dying over there? And then all the people are on Genito. What they were doing was, in effect, were saying that there's something wrong with the plan. There's something wrong. It's strange. It produces these types of giants, not normal kind of people, who are very powerful. But then a lot of people die. It's like, well, whatever. When you're acting on this level, you don't have to be very specific because you're just trying to appeal to people's emotions. So that's when they really wipe them out. That is to say that as long as the people, you see, on the first level, it was a question of how strong these people are. Can we win or can't we win? But as long as the attachment to the idea of the land was intact, you could see that in contemporary world. It's more like the Israelis or Americans, whatever, Jews, even the Israelis. As long as there was a strong desire for Israel, then people are willing to take much more risk. You know, those people who believe in the importance of the land and living in the land so they really settle and so expose themselves to more risk. But if you don't believe in the importance of the thing, so then, all right, if there's no risk, I'll go there for that. Then you'll see that those who, when the dangers increase, when there's terrorism, so a lot of people leave Israel. It's not worth it. So that's an important element. The two go hand in hand. The extent to which the person is willing to fight for something has a lot to do with how important it is to them. So here too, at first they said the land is good. He's fine. The land is good. But they didn't want to, you see, when a person is lying, he always wants to, it's like you mentioned, I mean, interesting, Yosef mentioned at the beginning, this guy here, he mentioned about the Palestinian, who's very clever, who's distorting. Usually when people are very clever at distorting, they don't lie completely. They will acknowledge, and it's a very effective tool to acknowledge certain facts as being true, generally speaking. But that establishes certain credibility. You just can deny everything, no one's going to listen to you. You have to give yourself credibility by saying, oh yeah, the Zavah, Kol, Vash, Unbeth. And they show them the truth. Then, however, they try to say, but there's a big problem over here. Just, right now we can't go in. You have to understand also, maybe this will help to answer Yosef's question a bit, is that you don't know exactly. What do you mean we can't do it? God said we're going to... Well, yeah, but maybe this is not the right time. I mean, like everything else, when people want to avoid something, so they'll like it to go for storage. We're not saying that it's not God's intention for us to have a man. We're just saying right now this situation can't be the right one. We're going to get killed. That's what they're saying. He said that goes a long way towards blunting the power of Yosef's question. How could they possibly do this? Well, there's plenty of ways that people could sort. They can sort anything. They can sort everything. Self-control. He's saying we're not going to inherit. Because the question is, what do you mean? We're not going to inherit the land? Because the whole thing's a lie. Everything's a lie. What's about being Jewish? I mean, that's part of the Amstrata. Yeah, you're right. It's part of the Amstrata. But we have to wait for the situation changes. Obviously, it's not God's intention for us to just go in and get killed. So you're walking into, landmines. We have to wait until the landmines are removed. It's quite clear that this is not the situation. This is not the time. We'll see you some other time. Nothing. I mean, you could always find a way of saying, I'm not rebelling against God, but you got to be faithful. This is not the faithful. This, it can't be that God is telling us to go right now, because we'll just get wiped out. Although, indeed, so then it must be Moshe, like everything else. You know, so it's Moshe's fault. This is Moshe's idea. Moshe can get it right. Moshe got the command made, Moshe made a mistake. There's plenty of ways you can attack. There's plenty of areas over here which you can attack the idea of going into the land. However, you see, at the first level, there was this debate. Then the other side comes in and says, what are you talking about? We can. We were there. We can beat them. Let's refute that. Then there was sort of, let's say, a stalemate. The next movement of the spies, and what Clint did, was the attack on the land. See, once they attacked the land to break down their attachment to the land, then they were finished. Because underneath it all, in order to achieve the level of courage, to go along with the plan of Hashem, and it takes a lot of courage. Because, again, you're going against your own common sense. You're going against the sense of stuff. You're going to go into an it's scary. You're invading a nation, powerful and giant, and all of these built-up cities. We look like a government. So from an emotional standpoint, it looks crazy. Now, if you're totally secure and you're a Muna, so then you do it. But if you have problems with that, then, you see, that's how they undermine them. By once they broke down the land, then they were finished. Because what's my motivation over here? Well, what's the motivating factor to bring myself up to this level? Well, I'm going to risk everything. Because it's Eretz Tova, it's a goodly land. So the real state of the Miraculum was essentially with the Lashnar against the land. That's what the first Rashi says, that they didn't learn from Miriam. And they went ahead and they spoke badly about the land. But that's really, I mean, the way Rashi interpreted, everything really revolved around that. I think that in the punishment, it says, what, our Bar Mishana?
Yes.
But it was a 40-day, the environment was 40 days. The Yom HaShana, right?
Yes.
And doesn't that indicate that why was it 40 days? It wasn't 40 days because of the military. It was 40 days because of all the other things, right?
Yes.
So these 40 days reflect the fact that the Jews had a need to be reassured about the goodness of the land on an emotional level, right? The punishment is much better. Yom HaShana.
Ready?
I'm sorry?
Ready how?
So did you hear that point?
Yeah.
I think it's a good point in terms of confirming the Yom HaShana. Because that's the Yom HaShana. Because therein lies the whole thing. The 40 days. The 40 days of the spying mission reflect the fact that they were not on a level where they could muster the attachment to the land purely in terms of God's authority. But they needed to do so in terms of their own devices to keep themselves. So that was the whole downfall. And that's what the punishment reflects. That they have to get over that emotion. Yes, Dad?
Yeah, how do you figure out tomorrow against the land?
That's another question. Well, of course he is, though. That's another question. I'll write that down. Write down the question. We didn't do the Ramban, but I think we went a certain distance for, you know, establishing the framework. This is Rashi's approach. Sorry? Hello?
Yeah.
All right, I think we'll stop here, guys.
Okay.
All right, have a good job.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. I think we'll discuss that, right? Because, you know, that people are willing, I believe, yes, that people are willing to fight and will be more courageous if there's a physical attachment to something. All right, did we go over that? That's why. Well, you see, the submission was not limited just to military intelligence. I mean, just believed by design, as you said. That's why you had the Nazi and each tribe. If it was still military, it wouldn't have worked out that way. And they were instructed to bring back the fruits and the land. It was just as much a, sort of an agricultural mission. By design, that's what Moshe instructed them to do. So it seems clear that one of the objectives was to build up a certain type of a attachment to one. That's what the Chazal is referring to, that the criticism, the one that Rashi quotes, that it was given the eyes of Moshe, but not the eyes of Hashem, was that I told him that it's a good land. And that seems to be coming out of nowhere, because where do you see the story that was the issue? It's perfectly natural, like the Ramban says, we're going to have to get to the land, so now we have to fly it out. And the Tamasha, they related to it, that it was good in Israel, because he can only relate to it in terms of the business. But to the extent that God didn't approve, it was because I already told him it's a good land, which to me indicates that that was really a need of theirs. It was a need to attain a certain level of attachment on the basis of the physical. But there's nothing wrong with that, but the fact is that God's promise should have been sufficient. That a person functioning on the correct level of Emuna, so the word of God should be sufficient. What does he have to see for himself? So therein lies the defect already, that the entire mission was flawed for that very reason. Because it was rooted in something which would be a departure from the appropriate level that a person should be on with regard to relating to the Baal Hashem. What does he have to see for himself? And, I mean, it's interesting, I'm just pointing it out, that in fact, one thing led to another, that the ultimate Avera, the panic that set in, and the fact that they were overcome by fear, which led them to deny the promise of our Shabbos, but it led them to deny that they'd be able to conquer the land. A certain sphere, a breakdown in terms of their Emuna, is basically the same thing. It's just a further development of the fact that they were overcome by their sense perception. And they allowed their own emotions, their own emotionally distorted way of thinking, emotionally. That is, they arrived at conclusions. This is the real conflict here. And there's no way of escaping it in terms of the Bechira. There's no way of escaping this. And, the fact that a person has seen miracles in the past is never going to be sufficient. Because every time he's confronted with a new situation. So, and miracles per se, if a person's belief is based upon miracles, is an inherent weakness, a deficiency in miracles. As we just went through the Rambam, within the truth from the Sinai. As the Rambam said that God didn't want the which is encouraged and founded on the basis of miracles. That's the stuff which they perceive first-hand knowledge, first-hand communication, basically, as opposed to miracles. Because miracles, after the fact, if they have a certain effect, it wears off. So it's not absolute. It's something that a person can dismiss. And I'll tell you something else, is that a miracle is something which happened in the past. So when it happens and a person believes that God is doing something for them, so he feels a certain gratitude. But if he doesn't internalize the basic principle, he does not perfect himself with regard to the idea behind the miracle. And even, and this is a question that was raised yesterday, that even after they saw firsthand that the Torah comes from a Kaddish Baruch, you know, they said Ma'aseh v'Nishma, there was no doubt at all as to the source. And one of the challenges against the idea, one of the questions that there was raised, well, if that's the case, how come the Jews sin afterwards? And rebelled, and so on and so forth. I mean, as if that were a question, that how can you maintain that the Jews had a clear-cut knowledge that God spoke to them, if that were the case, and they could never sin in that? That seems to be the premise of those kinds of questions. And that is not the case. Because the mere fact that a person at a certain point in his life has a clear conviction about something does not mean that the person will always act on the basis of that conviction. The capacity to sin is not removed by that. That's a mistaken understanding of how people function, of the understanding of human psychology. I mean, unless a person's free will is removed, it means that unless that aspect of man which impels him to sin, that is, the entire, there's another side to the personality, which is an irrational side. It's not just a question of having a desire, but the way a person functions is that when a person has desires, it causes him to think in a completely different kind of a way. It presents itself to him as being the ideal. That's the real challenge. When we studied about Nazir, you see it's a certain type of a lifestyle, there's a certain hedonistic philosophy. It's a way of thinking. Whatever a person does, he's doing on the basis of some kind of belief system. Except there's a correct belief system, and then there's a belief system which is brought about, essentially, by the force of the emotion. So, if a person has a conviction, as I say, that is not a foolproof phenomenon. That's not the way reality is. That's not human existence. Because he continues to confront new types of challenges. And even the idea of seeing Avraham Avinu, what was the point of all those Nisyonos? I mean, I think that, in a sense, taking Yosef's question, if that question is related to the whole issue of why did you ask that in general? You'd ask the same thing. I think if you'd ask the same question, you'd say, you see, Avraham Avinu was a mammon. There's no question. You can't question the quality of his amura. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even before, when he was in Ur-Kasdim and when he discovered the truth, and when he separated himself from his parents, and he began to argue with the people of Ur-Kasdim, and then he was prepared to give up his life for the truth. So what more do you want? So that's the end of the story. You see that it's not so simple. That life is very complicated, and there are different kinds of emotions, and that's the challenge. The real challenge is the extent to which the person's conviction becomes the guiding principle of his life. And the idea of Avraham Avinu, that the only reality was the tongue Hashem, which is the idea of Hashem. And the fact that he was willing to leave his land because of these two ideas does not automatically guarantee that he would listen to God and sacrifice his only son. That's a different kind of a challenge.
Rebbe?
I'm sorry?
Rebbe?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like the Nisyonos really are not just a test, but they're an opportunity for the person to raise their own level when the situation is given to the person so that they can pass.
Yeah, I understand that. That's a different point. But that presupposes what I'm saying.
Well, what I mean is, by calling
it all, why would you need to? I mean, if you're assuming that everything's incorporated in the original Emuna, so what do you need this thing, what do you need that thing?
Well, what is more incorporated in the Emuna? You mean, what is like an absolute thing? Do you have to bring it all?
The host, the test presupposes, I mean, if it's not Bechira, then what's the point? If it's not Bechira, you're assuming that in this case the person is not exercising Bechira, so then what's the point?
In which case they're not exercising Bechira?
In the case where he's being tested in a new situation.
He is exercising Bechira.
He is, but you see that, well, if it's Bechira, it means to say that he might not do it.
That's true.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
It's true, you're only saying that what's the benefit? Why would God subject him to this? And you're correct, that he comes through it successfully, so it's a beneficial, it raises him to a higher level. But the very fact that you're saying that indicates that he may have two different levels.
But it seems like, I mean, I would say one thing about the cholesterol in the midbar.
Yes, I suppose, let me just finish my point, let me say, is that, so you see that the fact that they experienced miracles in the past is no guarantee as to how a person is going to react in a completely different situation. Because now new fears have been around, and it's the fears and it engenders a whole way of thinking and all kinds of doubts. And under the effect of those pressures, it's true, he can make him look bad, and now it depends upon his mind. Now it depends upon the extent to which his activities and to which his conclusions are determined by his knowledge and not by the emotion. And the fact that God did such and such in the past, well, it could be, it depends. If the person is completely determined that he's going to deal with the situation that he confronts right now from the standpoint of his knowledge, and he's going to put aside all of his emotions, so then that's an important factor. Ultimately, it's not this miracle or that miracle. Ultimately, it's the Yad Hashem that really goes back to Sinai, that God established the system and he authorized Moshe Rabbeinu. It's the authorization of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'll lay rage. That this is something. You bear in mind also that it's not that simplistic if you put yourself back in that situation. Because there's plenty of room for denial, there's plenty of room for rationalization. When the Jews complained in the Midbar, so, on the surface, the complaint was directed against Moshe Rabbeinu and against Aaron. Indirectly, of course, it was a distortion. It was a rebellion against the Baruch Hu. But that's what Moshe would always point out, that it's not on us, it's really on God. But once they had Sinai and the system was established, so then all of the commands came from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, had they been consistent, had they incorporated the ideas of Sinai, so then they would have followed the Moshe Rabbeinu. But you see, when they encountered a situation that now the command was to go into that land, and then they took a look at the land, and they saw that from their point of view, that it's a slaughter, we're going to get wiped out. So that, and they allowed those fears. They allowed those fears to determine their decision. That's where it lies the Bechira. There's no way to escape Bechira, because you're going to be in a situation, emotions are going to be aroused, and now you have a conflict. On the one hand, you have the emotional part of you that's telling you you're going to get wiped out. Now, the challenge is to be able to put aside those emotions and to operate in terms of your knowledge. So, if you operate in terms of the knowledge and you have the proper conviction, the proper emuna, fine. If not, so then you're going to come to the conclusion that's dictated by the emotion. And then you're going to say, this is ridiculous, this is crazy. Now, you're not going to deny, a person's not going to deny God directly. Immediately, so you'll say that Moshe Rabbeinu is making a mistake over here. This can't be the correct thing. And you'll hang on to the general ideas. You're not saying that going into the land of Israel is false, but the situation is not right now. We have to wait a while, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. All right. Yes. That's what I wanted to show. It's not a question. You can't raise that question. I just want to make just to summarize. I think it's very important. You can't ask that question, that they saw this, they saw that. It doesn't put yourself in the same situation. All of those things are significant only to the extent that the person has internalized them and has changed himself into a different type of a person that, no matter what the situation is, only operates in accordance with his terminal account. That's the only way that a person can be successful. And then, if there's any fail, so then he's going to have a battle. And you're not going to have a situation where you're free. You're free from conflict because you're a creature of emotions. And once the emotions are aroused, whenever the emotions are aroused, you have a conflict. That's true in anything. You can tell a person that's been successful and you've always won the case or you've always done this, you've always done that. Yeah, it may be true, but if it's a new situation and it affects the emotions in a different kind of a way, so then the person will be back into a state of conflict. So here too, there's no guarantee. And sometimes it's possible that a person will fail. If the emotions are such that the powerful emotions have been aroused that the person really can't even control them, then that's the case where you don't have to fear it, so God will be punished. But I'm trying to tell you that as long as a person is functioning as a human being and confronting the challenges of existence, so I'll probably be asked if I go most of it. You can't believe in yourself through a day you die. You always have to retain a constant type of vigilance. I mean, it's interesting that right after the story, you have the myth of citizenship. But the idea of citizenship is that it's a constant reminder that the entire system, that you're bound to live by a system of mitzvahs. Your life is permeated with purpose. All right, so that's that. But anyway, in terms of that question, really what I'm saying is that it's based upon a misunderstanding of how people function. And also it's based upon a misunderstanding of the effect that a miracle is going to have, a miracle of the past. It's not that simple. I mean, if a person, you can't operate simplistically, even the other way. Even if a person were to say, okay, I'll just go in and take any kind of chance I want because God saved me yesterday, he'll surely save me today. That's just not the correct idea. So, if you analyze it, you'll see that all a person could say was, yeah, no situations, we were saved. And even if he was acknowledged, it was God. But how do I know that there's this situation? Every situation is different. Maybe this is a huge mistake. Maybe it's a huge mistake and we're going against the will of God to even attempt it. Well, we were supposed to rely on miracles. So the past, the miracles of the past did not provide any type of an absolute guarantee that the Jews would just simply merrily walk into the land. That can only come about to a certain level of perfection, which had to do with overcoming many, many emotions. And ultimately, that was the downfall of that generation. That's why the entire generation had to wander in the wilderness, that they weren't fit to enter the land, because perhaps as a result of the slave experience, whatever you want to say it was, there were certain emotions there that they themselves could never overcome, and if they couldn't overcome them, they were a block, they were an obstacle to functioning in accordance with their knowledge in the situation. Okay, your turn.
First Rabban says that...
Who's that? Harry?
Yeah.
I just wanted to...
First of all,
I didn't want to answer that. I just wanted to give you a chance to absorb it. Yosef specifically asked the question. I think that answers the question.
But,
you understand the difference? Just think for a second what you asked. Think for a second what you asked.
Right.
And does this answer the question? I mean, your question presupposed that this is absurd. For people who experience miracles, does they answer that question?
It answers one question. It answers the question of what about the miracles? Yeah.
Okay.
But who's their resistance?
Whose resistance?
Kol Yisrael.
To what?
Going into the land.
Yeah, the resistance essentially was based upon fear. What they're saying, this is a disaster. We're walking into a disaster.
Then you're going to get killed.
That's what they say. No, the way.
In the desert, we're saved?
I'm sorry? No, basically, you see why it's so serious and why Moshe had to intervene with a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that God was prepared to destroy them. Because it wasn't just a minor thing. That's it. This is really destruction of the entire good, in fact, because they were they were in fact saying that we can't go ahead. This Irish mission was running, one thing led to another. That we can't, you're right, they're not saying we'll stay in the wilderness. They're not gonna stay in the wilderness. We can't attack the land now, so let's go back to the shrine.
Are they serious about that?
Okay.
When it comes to, when they say Nisneros Meshivim Mitzrayimah,
yeah,
and they say it a few times, like, I never understand, are they serious, or is that just like something they're saying at the moment because, like, it seems like a good idea at the time? Okay. Meaning sometimes a person will be in a situation where they're just overwhelmed and they'll say, you know, I wish it was the way it was before, even if the way it was before was terrible. But sometimes we feel overwhelmed and they'll say, I wish we could go back to the way it was. Even if they can look at it objectively, they can recognize it was worse. And then they will recognize that. They're just saying it because of the pressure on them. Or they really want to go back. I never know which one it is.
Well, obviously this was an emotional reaction. They weren't in a calm state. It wasn't just something which they said, okay, let's deliberate, we'll take it over, and we'll review it. No, it was a result of the
pressure.
Yeah, that was brought out by the report of the stars. But you see that, the record is the essence of what the attitude of the people. You know, the Yamalan Kala Ego, we must be the Irish giant of a new Brazil, the Muslim. On that way, they're saying it's God.
I just don't find it hard to believe.
What?
Because, I'll tell you why. Because they knew, it's not just that Hashem did miracles, but they saw that all of nature is under his control. It's not just miracles, it's that the Makos showed them that he controls airs, he can produce Makos to the air as well and wipe them out.
You're making one huge mistake.
Okay.
That's very nice if you're in a base medrash and you're calm and you're analyzing it and you're giving Russia. But you're just negating the entire situation that they were in. That people get irrational. And people are worked up. When you're out here in the desert, I'm not trying to justify them. A philosopher, a guy in the Ivory Tower, has a problem. How can it be? But we're talking about people in the Midbar, and who just been subjected to a tremendously powerful, report, which arouses all of their fears. And they're in an irrational state. Obviously, this is not logical, what they're saying, that God would do all these things and then bring them into the land to have them wiped out. So obviously, it's a Shatara Amunah. It's a breakdown of their Amunah under the pressure of certain challenges. So, I mean, I can't judge. I'm not here to judge or not to judge. Obviously, it was a great error. But your question doesn't hold. You say, you can't believe. Well, we just can't believe. You're not in that situation. You're just asking a logical question. And right, you're correct, that was the case. But what you're asking is, how can a person be illogical? He's in the desert, he's being affected by all kinds of challenges, and how can he not be rational, 100% rational? Well, that's the idea of letting down. Now, they were expected. This was something from the standpoint of the truth, that this is something that they should have been able to overcome, because God wouldn't subject them to this when he's down, that they simply be incapable of overcoming. But that's the idea of the Bechira, that they allow themselves to be swayed by their emotions. And one thing led to another. They all started with the mission. They'd be better off without this spying mission.
I don't believe it.
Don't believe what?
It's not just they understood that everything in the world is under God's control. And they knew that idea. It doesn't seem like once you have that, like you could, that a person or people standing against you could really make a difference. And it's not even like they went to Moshe and said, it's dangerous because folks are really going to protect
them. But what are you talking about when your leaders come back? You're talking about the leaders. I don't know really
So what do you think? The story didn't happen.
When their leaders came back and told them that the...